Thank you for joining us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, and you've been listening to a conversation and President Obama speak on the election. That's what we do here at WPR, and of course, what we will continue to do for you in the coming months and years ahead. And I think we do a pretty good job of it. But we will also continue to bring you all of the other stories and information that you have become accustomed to hearing, especially during this hour. And in this program, we don't deal with politics very much. And we will continue along our path of bringing you the other stories of interest to you. And that's what we're going to do right now. Every Wednesday on this show, for example, we deal with outdoor and environmental issues. And today we're going to take a look at one of those issues, endangered species. In 1992, if I'm not mistaken, an antelope-like animal called Saola was discovered in the mountains on the border of Laos and Vietnam. And we're going to be talking about this endangered animal and others as well with our two guests. Bill Robichard in the studio with me. He's the Global Wildlife Conservation Saola Conservation Program Coordinator. He's been working on wildlife conservation and research in Southeast Asia for nearly 25 years. Bill, welcome to the program. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you, Larry. Great to be here.
And with us as well, Erin Flynn. And she is the Conservation Education Curator at the Henry Vilas Zoo here in Madison. And she's been working with Bill in this conservation effort. So we're going to hear about that and talk about endangered animals in general, talk about what the zoo is doing too. And, of course, answer your questions. You might have some questions about this endangered animal, the Saola. I don't know a thing about it. And you may not either. You may be a part of a conservation group. We'd love to hear from you. I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. You could also send us an email at talk@wpr.org or post on the Larry Mueller Facebook page. Erin Flynn, by the way, thank you so much for joining us as well.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, let's talk about this endangered animal. Bill, how'd you get involved in helping a species that's, frankly, is halfway around the world from here?
Well, I'm from Wisconsin, and I'm from this part of the world. And I first went to Southeast Asia. I did zoology at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And my first chance to go to Southeast Asia was with the International Crane Foundation, just up the road in Baraboo. I went to Vietnam with ICF in 1990 to do some crane surveys down in the Mekong Delta. And after a month in Vietnam, I just decided to go next door and see what Laos was like, because I thought, well, you never hear anything about Laos. So I spent some time in Laos after that trip and quickly figured out that there was a lot of forest left in Laos and very little known about the wildlife there. So I started looking for opportunities to go back to Laos to work. And I was actually in Laos in 1992 when the news broke of this discovery of this extraordinary new mammal just on the border of Laos and Vietnam. And it was probably the most surprising zoological discovery of the 20th century.
Yeah, so, really something. And Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer today, Jill may have a photo up of the Saola. Yeah, she's nodding her head. Yes, I don't have it quite up. I don't have my own Facebook page up here yet, the Larry Mueller Show page, but I'm sure she has that up. Erin, how did you and the Vilas Park Zoo get involved in Bill's work?
So Bill actually came and sought us out because there was an Isthmus article on our director, Rhonda Schwetz, who does some conservation work with orangutans over in Borneo. And he came, contacted us, said, hey, I have this really cool endangered animal, this great conservation project that I work with. Would you be interested in hearing us out? So, sure, Bill, come on in, give us a talk. We knew absolutely nothing about it. And we're just absolutely captivated by the story of the Saola. And there was this just hanging carrot, this opportunity of here are these hundreds of thousands of poaching snares. Bill actually has one sitting with him right now, that are being collected from the environment with the project that he heads. And someone somewhere must be able to do something with this. So I thought, you know, well, darn it, someone somewhere should.
Yeah.
And why not us? So it took a lot of brainstorming with a lot of people to figure out a way to make something positive with that. Bill came back in, was kind enough to give his presentation again to our volunteer corps, to our docents, who are really the heart and soul of this project. And they fell in love with it, too. We got them on board, and that was it.
That's
we were
cool
off and
things.
Running.
And we'll be able to talk about some of those things as we go along today. I want to go back, Bill, to you for a bit to talk more, although we have a photo up of it. Describe what the sow looks like.
Yeah, it's an extraordinarily beautiful animal. It's what was remarkable about its discovery is that it wasn't just a new species of mammal; it was an entirely new genus. One genus can have several species, and new species of smaller animals are being found, you know, with some regularity. But to find an entirely new genus of mammal in the world, you know, larger than a bread box, is extraordinary for the closing years of the 20th century. The scientific name that was given to the animal, the genus name, is Pseudo-Oryx, because it superficially looks like the antelope, like oryxes of North Africa and the Middle East. So it has these very long horns, sometimes more than 2 feet long, and then this beautiful pattern of white spots on the face. But even an animal this distinctive, and they're about the size of a white-tailed deer, but even the Vietnamese biologists in Hanoi didn't know about this animal. The local people in villages in the Annamite Mountains where it occurs knew about it, but it was completely unknown to the outside world. And it was just an extraordinarily surprising discovery.
Yeah, and how was it discovered?
There was a team of biologists from WWF, a British guy, John McKinnon, and biologists from the Vietnam's Department of Forestry. They went to do a general biodiversity survey and wildlife survey of a small but little explored protected area called Vu Quang on Vietnam's border with Laos. During the survey, one day, one of the Vietnamese biologist team members, he went into a nearby local village to try to buy some fresh vegetables for the food camp. And in the village, like nailed to the wall of a house of one of the hunters, he saw these extraordinary long horns, unlike any animal known from Southeast Asia.
Hmm.
And they eventually saw multiple sets of these horns. Some of them were still quite fresh, with fresh flesh on them. And they knew that they had discovered something unknown to the outside world.
That is very, very cool. Talking today with Bill Robichard, a Wisconsin native, Global Wildlife Conservation, SAWLA Conservation Program Coordinator, and Aaron Flynn, Conservation Education Curator at the Henry Vilas Zoo. We're going to be taking some questions. Ron in Norwalk has a question. We'll get to that here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio in just a few seconds. Thanks so much for being with us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here talking with our guests today, Bill Robichard and Aaron Flynn, about endangered species that have Wisconsin ties. And here's one. And I said we had a picture of the SAWLA up on our Facebook page, but I'm told that's not a SAWLA.
don't feel bad. In fact, SAWLA is the largest terrestrial animal in the world of certain existence that's never been seen in the wild by a biologist.
Oh.
So we have a few camera trap photographs of it. We have some photographs of some short-lived captives. There aren't any in captivity in the world. So there aren't, even though it's now one of the rarest animals in the world, there really isn't much known about it. So the fact that you don't have a right photograph of it, there are not a lot of photographs of it out there.
Ron in Norwalk has a question I think that applies to us right here. Ron, thank you so much for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, Larry and guest. And I really have two questions. The first one is, what is the difference between threatened and endangered species? Those definitions and what the difference is in protection in the U.S. And also, do those definitions and protections carry through to other parts of the world?
All right. Good questions. Bill, let's turn to you for that.
Okay. In the world, there's the International Union for the Conservation of Nature, or IUCN. They publish a very significant list every year called the Red List. and it profiles every threatened species and species that are considered near threatened in the world. So they categorize species as threatened. And within the threatened category, they're given rankings depending on the how precarious their status is in the wild or in captivity. And the and as you move up the scale, you move from vulnerable, which is, you know, moderately threatened, up into a category that's endangered, which is considered obviously more severe, and then critically endangered, which is the highest category. So in generally in the lingua of conservationists, endangered is considered a more perilous state than threatened.
Now, and Ron says, wonders also, does this carry through across the world, that category?
Yeah. So that's a worldwide global category for all species in the world that are assessed by the IUCN, the International Union for the Conservation of Nature.
But I would expect that in, just to go along with that line of thought for just another minute, that how one country or another may deal with the status of a particular animal might change or not?
Yeah, so countries will also have their own lists of threatened species or red lists. For example, Vietnam has sort of its own national red list for species that could be common in other countries, but for various reasons are threatened in Vietnam.
Okay.
And so the Vietnamese want to put attention to that. The IUCN Red List, though, is a global list. It's basically blind to national boundaries, and it's just looking at the global status of animals, of species in the world, wherever they occur.
All right. Ron, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Let's talk a little bit more in terms of being endangered. How many are... Do we know how many of the salas exist?
No, we're not sure. As I said, it's never been seen in the wild by a biologist, although we have some recent camera trap photographs of it. We've seen some that have been caught by villagers. But based on information from local people in its range, if things are good, there may be a couple of hundred left. If things are really poor, the numbers may be down in the 20s.
Yeah, when
tens
it gets
or 20s.
Tens and 20s, when it gets down that low.
Yeah, and this is why it's probably, it may be the most endangered large mammal in the world today, even though people have not heard of it much, certainly in the top five.
You said there was one, I guess we wouldn't know how well it would survive in a confined situation. I know that, and Aaron could probably talk about this a little bit too, that there have been endangered species that, because of zoos, and the work of zoos, the populations have been able to expand.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We have a few that we love to talk about that are some great storytellers to that. Mm-hmm. And the number one would be the golden lion tamarin. Mm-hmm. So golden lion tamarins were on the brink of extinction in South America and were brought in with a coordinated effort between AZA zoos and wildlife biologists and the government of, I believe it is Brazil where they're from, mm-hmm. In South America, were able to breed them, expand their population, and then a lot of those zoo animals were actually taught, like, predator avoidance. These are the things you need to avoid. Mm-hmm. Put back into the wild and bred there. So they've now expanded the populations in the wild. Black-footed ferret would be a similar story at home here in the U.S.
Sure.
Where AZA zoos helped restore those populations as well. California condor, Mexican wolf. We're pretty proud of that aspect of how we can help wildlife. Yeah. Very different situation than what we have with Salo right now, unfortunately.
Well, we haven't seen one yet.
There have been, since the animal was discovered in Laos and Vietnam in 1992, we do know, in fact, I've seen one of them, there have been several in captivity. But they're all caught in an ad hoc manner by local villagers or government officials, and none of them were kept any standard of good international care like you would see animals at, you know, Henry Vila Zoo. That said, the status of the animal is now so precarious in the wild due to commercial hunting. It's not local people killing salas to eat. It's driven by demand for the international wildlife trade that biologists have decided that it is necessary now to establish a captive insurance population of salas. So we're actually... We have a consortium of some of the best expertise in the world around this, like Los Angeles Zoo, San Diego Zoo, Zoological Society of London, working with us to help us figure out how to do this in cooperation with the governments of Vietnam and Laos.
So it's something that probably going to happen in the next year or so?
We hope so, yeah. It's moving very quickly now.
Well, talk more about your work, and you're here a lot in Wisconsin, but then you're spending a lot of time over there as well.
Yeah, I lived in Laos most of 10 years or more until 2011, and then I came back. I was able to reestablish a home base in Wisconsin, but I go back and forth a lot. I just got home from Vietnam and Laos a few days ago. It's kind of all running together. Got home in time to vote. Didn't have to vote absentee. But yeah, it's an amazing place to work, and I feel very fortunate because after the Sao La was discovered, and it was found in what's called the Annamite Mountains along the border of Laos and Vietnam, we biologists started paying more attention to the Annamites. And in quick succession, after the discovery of the Sao La, two new species of deer were found, a beautiful new species of rabbit with like chocolate brown stripes on it, an entirely bizarre new taxonomic family of rodent was found, a bald songbird, of the type that's known from Southeast Asia, but it has no feathers on its head like a vulture, a very strange thing. This is a pace of discovery of new large animals that's unmatched in any region of the world in probably the past 50 or 100 years in this little mountain range along the border of Laos and Vietnam. Unfortunately, these animals are now under severe threat for the demand for animals used in traditional East Asian medicine and bushmeat restaurants. As I said, the issue is not local people hunting these animals for food. It's organized, illegal, commercial poaching gangs. And what they do, one of their techniques is they set thousands of wire snares made out of like a bicycle brake cable in the forest. And these snares catch everything, including the Sao La.
And we'll be expanding on that, talking some more about the Sao La and about those snares and some of the other animals as well. We're going to take a quick look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Net, and then we'll be back with our guests. Stay with us. Well, the Sao La was discovered in the mountains on the border of Laos and Vietnam. It was the first new discovery of a large mammal in 50 years. And we're talking about it today with our two guests. And we're talking about endangered animals in general as well. Larry Mueller here. My guests today, Bill Robichard in the studio with me. He's the Global Wildlife Conservation Sao La Conservation Program Coordinator. He's been working on wildlife conservation and research in Southeast Asia for right around 25 years. Also with us today, Aaron Flynn. Aaron is the conservation education curator at the Henry Vilas Zoo in Madison. Fun zoo, wonderful zoo. I've spent many hours there, as a matter of fact. She's been working with Bill in his conservation efforts as well, and the zoo and all of the folks over there who volunteer have done a lot of pretty cool things relating to the Sao La and, frankly, other endangered animals as well. As we visit with them, I hope you'll join in with your own questions. What do you think about saving endangered species? What about the Sao La? Maybe you're part of a conservation group and have a question. I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or go ahead and post on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. We'd love to hear from you. Earlier, we had posted the wrong photo that was not of the Sao La, but Jill Nadeau, our producer, in her usual efficient way, has found a great photo, and we now have it up on our Facebook page so you can have a look at this animal. And, Bill, you're saying about the size of a white-tailed deer, maybe a little smaller? Touch smaller, but not a lot smaller.
Yeah, about 150 pounds, maybe.
Okay. Well, we were we've got plenty to talk about here, and you were talking about some of the other animals that have been discovered as kind of, in a way, maybe as a result of this discovery of the Sao La?
Yeah, because the discovery of the Sao La really brought the increased attention to this part of the world. And I mean, just the other new species of animals that have been discovered in this area, and they only live in this range of mountains along the border of Laos and Vietnam, has really put Laos and Vietnam on the map as one of the most important global biodiversity hotspots in the world and one of the highest priorities for conservation. So we're really happy, and me being a Wisconsinite, I'm so proud of what Henry Weiler Zoo has been doing in this conservation effort. We have teams of rangers trained by villagers in Laos and Vietnam, working with our partners, WWF, the World Wildlife Fund, and the Wildlife Conservation Society. They collect these wire snares by the thousands from these forest areas, and then we send them to Henry Weiler Zoo, and Aaron Flynn can explain what happens to them then.
Yeah, I see some of the results I have right in front of me. They're pretty cool. But talk about it, Aaron.
Thank you. So that's a little how the local community has helped making a big impact across the world. So Bill gives us these snares from the forest, which are out there to do this, you know, horrible, unpleasant thing of trapping the wildlife. We get them, we clean them, break them down, and we make them into basically handmade arts and crafts, which are a combination of hardware and artsy stuff.
Yeah.
So it's kind of difficult for us to come up with. But we make primarily dream catchers and keychains. So it sounds pretty simple. But each one features a charm on there of the Sao La, which is the flagship of this program, which is called Catching Hope Repurposed Poaching Snares, and comes with a little tag of the story. And it's really the story that's captivated people, and that's what keeps us going, because it's a volunteer-run program. There are really about 10 of us that are really involved in this and do it. And then, you know, we were fortunate enough that the Wisconsin State Journal picked it up last end of December, did an article on this, and we had this overwhelming response from the community coming in. Elementary schools were sending kids from the Madison Metropolitan School District on school time to come to the zoo to craft with us for this program to help make a difference as global citizens for wildlife across the world, which was really cool. So we love the fact that Bill, who is our and all of the Sala Working Group is our partner, but Bill's really our point of contact. He's from Wisconsin, and he's luckily been accessible to us. So we've even been able to get, like, our summer zoo camp program. We had 6th through 9th graders in our Conservation Connections camp that got to meet with Bill in person, ask him about saving wildlife in Asia, on the other side of the world, and how we got there and what they can do, too. So it's a really powerful, awesome connection for both of us.
And I'll just add, I think a key point of the story is all the money that Henry Weiler Zoo makes from selling these snare handicrafts to the public in Madison goes back to paying more rangers to collect more snares to protect wildlife in Laos, Vietnam. Mm-hmm. And with the season coming up, this time of year they also make some fantastic Christmas tree ornaments out of these snares collected in Laos and Vietnam.
Well, this is a keychain, but it looks like it would make a great Christmas tree or ornament, to be perfectly honest.
Thank you. I multi-purpose them. I also use them as bird strike deterrents on my windows at home.
Saving more wildlife.
Yes.
You make earrings?
We haven't, but we can.
What size do you take, Larry? I'll take an order.
Well, I'm not an earring guy myself, but the charm itself is a really attractive charm of the Sala, and I thought you could make nice earrings out of that.
And I'll point out, and it's
that as well.
This is and I'll just remind the listeners that this is a conservation issue. I mean, this commercial poaching is just emptying the forests of Southeast Asia of its wildlife. And now it's getting to the U.S. where bears are being poached in some of our national parks to feed the demand in East Asia for bear paws and bear bile. It's also an animal welfare issue. Because these wire snares, a commercial hunter or poacher will set a snare line, it'll run through the forest sometimes almost a mile long with hundreds of snares in it. And they catch the animal by the leg, whatever it is, from a pheasant to a deer to a sow law, to a civet, all sorts of things, to a clouded leopard. But they only check their snare lines every couple of weeks. So the animal basically hangs by its leg in the snare.
Oh.
In great stress and pain for a few days till it dies of stress and thirst. And oftentimes, by the time the poacher gets back to check the snare line, there isn't even anything of value of the animal to use, and the carcass is just thrown away. So it's both a conservation issue and an animal welfare issue, and it's just fantastic that Madison, Wisconsin is involved in helping this very far away. But, you know, you look at our Earth from very far away, there are no national boundaries, you know. It's mm-hmm. just we're all on one blue planet, and the mountains of Laos and Vietnam, you know, it's also, I look at those mountains and I see the Driftless area in Wisconsin where I live.
Talking with Bill Robichard and Aaron Flynn today. Aaron is a curator, conservation education curator at the Henry Vilas Zoo in Madison. Bill Robichard, a Wisconsin native, Global Wildlife Conservation, SAWLA Conservation Program Coordinator. You may have a question or comment. I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you with your questions or with your comments. What some people might ask, I'm thinking about these snares. It's a terrible, inhumane way for anything to have to perish, for sure. And so for that reason alone, I think many people would want to be involved in something like this. But what about the person who says, well, there's only 20 left, you know, why bother?
Yeah, and there may be only 20 left, there may be 100 left. For me, Larry, it's about, I mean, there's a couple things. One thing I believe, this animal has been a species on the planet for 8 million years. And just the last 10 or 15 years of the explosion and poaching for the wildlife trade are driving it to extinction. And one is just the inherent right of other species besides humans to share this earth with us. Second, it's just beautiful. It's a beautiful part of the world. And the animal, SAWLA, is probably not going to have a cure for cancer. It's not going to save us from global warming. There's no economic benefit to this animal to humans. But I don't think conservation should always be about economic benefit to humans. It's just about saving some beauty in the world. You know, nobody asks the curators at the Musée d'Orsay in Paris, why are you saving Van Gogh's last 20 paintings in your museum? Mm-hmm. They don't have to answer that. Just the inherent beauty of the thing is enough. And for me, that's enough for us. I think it should be, or at least it is for me, to focus on saving this extraordinary piece of beauty that's been on the planet for 8 million years. And we as humans can take action in maybe the next 3 to 5 years to keep that from disappearing and keeping the world a more beautiful place.
Yeah. Has the Vilas Park Zoo, Henry Vilas Zoo, I should say, been involved in other efforts with endangered species?
Absolutely. Our director is actually in Borneo right now.
Oh.
She has this really great program where she takes AZA zoo professionals, brings them over, and they teach the local people over in Borneo, Malaysia, Indonesia, how to care for the animals there that are injured or orphaned in the palm oil trade, primarily in the pet mm-hmm. trade, how to take care of them to the standards that we take care of them here. So like Bill had mentioned, standards can vary quite different across the world. So teaching them about enrichment, changing their enclosures, like giving them more realistic habitats and really engaging their minds in medical care and training that we find so important. I mean, animal welfare is absolutely one of the main tenets of AZA zoos, as are conservation. So it's a really great, meeting of the two, this project.
And AZA, by the way, means American Zoological or Zoo?
Yes.
American Zoological Association.
Yes, the Association of Zoos and Aquariums, or American Association of Zoos and Aquariums. Yep.
All right, well, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. We're very passionate about being conservation organizations, and that happens in many different ways. So in the case of our director, she's over in Borneo right now with AZA Zoo professionals, changing the lives of those animals there. And then they go out into the rainforest and plant more trees for reforestation. Because habitat loss, whether it's through global climate change or whether it's through deforestation, is the leading cause of animals becoming threatened or extinct across the world. So in the case of the sow law, it's that poaching that's the real problem. And why do we bother to do it? It's for us, it's that message of hope. It's inspiring action, because if you're a kid, you can come do this and help. If you're an adult, you can come do it with us as well and help, or sure, buy it. Like, anyone can come in, be a global citizen, make a difference, take that action. And just going towards the future, it is really that message of hope. I'm sorry to be redundant, but it's so important. It's just a core of this program.
Well, Arlene in New Berlin has something for us. Let's go there. Arlene, hi. Thank you for calling.
Good afternoon, Larry. I really enjoy your program immensely, and you have wonderful guests on.
Thank you.
There's just a little, an old saying, once the creatures on this planet are gone, guess who will be the next to go?
Yeah.
And nobody seems to care about that. Natural disaster is one thing, but human disaster to the creatures, that's something else.
Yeah.
My answer off the air.
All right. Thanks for calling. Bill, you want to comment?
Yeah, I agree. Fantastic. And I like to think of, it's not humans and nature. I mean, we're part of nature. I mean, show me a place on the planet where there isn't nature. This whole building we're in was made from nature, from mm-hmm. fossil fuels and everything else. So I think this dichotomy between human and nature is a dangerous one and a false one. We're all into this. We're all on this blue marble together.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Arlene, for calling. I appreciate it so much. Aaron, did you have something to add to that? I'm sorry.
Oh, no. One of the things that AZA teaches, mm-hmm. part of our job as conservation educators, is actually to connect primarily children, but the community, to nature. Understand that we are actually part of nature and that our actions influence the environment and the animals within it. So it's exactly what Bill said.
And just to go along with that, maybe you could explain or describe, there are lots of people listening who have never been to the Violet Zoo. I think it has such an interesting background. Henry Vilas, talk about that just a little bit.
Absolutely. We're going on 104, 105 years old now. The land was gifted in honor of Henry Vilas, who passed away of illness about 105
years
ago.
Yeah.
Go figure. In his memory, as a tribute to him. And that land was put aside as forever free, so we are a no-charge zoo. So we are there to serve everyone in the community. Our gates are open every day of the year. Even upcoming Thanksgiving and Christmas, we do have half days, and we let you know about that. So
sure,
hopefully no one's disappointed. But we are all about connecting the public with the animals. And then hopefully through that connection, they will care and want to make a difference or to preserve the habitat that these animals rely on and so desperately need. So it's all about making those emotional connections and providing a safe place for our local community to spend time as families and just be out appreciating nature.
Laura in New Berlin has a question for us. Laura, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hello, all. I was wondering if the guests have any insight into the poachers themselves. Is it that they have no economic viability? They're desperate beings? Or are they simply callous to this unspeakable suffering they're inflicting?
Yeah. Thanks for that question, Laura. Bill, we'll turn to you.
I think that's a good question. And, of course, not all poachers are the same. But I think part of it is just the prices have gotten too high. But I said, this is not poor people trying to feed their families by hunting animals and making a little bit of money. I think the wildlife trade is now the third largest illicit trade in the world behind just drugs and human trafficking. So, for example, there's a beautiful little box turtle that, again, is found pretty much only in the Annamite Mountains like the Saola. And a villager you know, the average annual income for a villager up in the mountains of Laos might be a couple thousand dollars a year. But, yeah. you know, they don't need a lot. They're not in a cash income. They don't need a lot of money. But they, if they find one of these box turtles, they can sell it to a wildlife trader for $20,000 in cash for one turtle. So this is
10
years
worth of income.
This is like drugs, and it's basically driven by just... and unfortunately, you often hear that one of the main drivers of the loss of biodiversity in the tropics or in Southeast Asia is poverty and people struggling to make a living. That's not the case anymore. The main driver of biodiversity loss in Asia and Southeast Asia is wealth. It's the increasing wealthy classes and elites in urban centers in places like China and Hanoi and that, who have disposable incomes embedded in a culture of buying wildlife as luxury food items and luxury medicines.
Sad. Laura, thank you for that question. Deborah in Milwaukee, thank you for calling. Hello.
You're welcome. I want to thank you for having this show and taking my mind off the thought of listening to Donald Trump for the next 4 years. I was up late, but this is refreshing, and I looked the animal up on my phone, and they consider it the Asian unicorn because it's so rare. And I just wonder, I kind of changed my question when I heard you talking about the price that people are willing to pay for a box turtle, and I see it happening with elephants, and I'm like, well, I always think the people watching the elephants or the people in charge are part of it. How do you assure that the people who are given the right to take care of and watch these animals are actually not in on
the deal? Yeah.
The lucky thing about the fortunate thing about the Saolan, where we're lucky there, is because the animal never occurred in China, there's no use for it in traditional Chinese medicine. Even though it's one of the rarest animals in this region in the world, it's actually not targeted by the poachers because it has no value. But it's just being caught up in the general slaughter by the setting of these thousands of snares. And I think for, you know, trying to alleviate this issue and doing what we support, I think for both Wisconsinites, Madisonians, and Americans, there's a nice connection. First of all, from the Madison and Wisconsin side, is, you know, we have a very large Hmong community in Madison who came from Laos after the Vietnam War. And most of what we know about Saola that I know about, it has been come from talking to Hmong villagers and other ethnic groups in its range in Laos. So there's this nice connection between that community here in Madison and the communities I work with in Laos and Vietnam. Secondly, Laos has the unhappy distinction of being the most bombed country per capita in human history during the Vietnam War. And what's interesting, a lot of the American bombing was focused along the Ho Chi Minh Trail along the border of Laos and Vietnam, precisely the range of Saola. So I think it's a nice thing where, as Americans, we once acted to destroy, we can now return to conserve and restore.
And thanks again, Deborah, for that question. And I just want to go back to the things that are being made from these traps. They're beautiful. And I think we have some photos. Do we have some photos up on our... Yeah, and Jill says, of course I have photos up there of the various things that are being made. And they are beautiful. People can you order online or do you... Of course, I'm sure, Aaron, you want people to come visit the zoo.
Yeah, that would be lovely. You can actually place an order through us. I will be happy to help you if you send me an email. It's at HVZ for Henry Vilas Zoo, catchinghope@gmail.com. There's also in our gift shop, which I'm really excited to announce. You may also see it in some other AZA gift shops around the country. It was recently picked up at Zoo Boise in Idaho, Zoo Atlanta in Georgia, and International Crane Foundation has them too. But when you get them through us, everything is going straight to Bill, which is pretty awesome.
Pretty awesome.
Well, not to Bill, to the Rangers.
Oh, sorry. I apologize. To the Saola working group that we partner with that funds and supports and trains the amazing people in the field that are taking the snares out of the environment. So it's a beautiful circle.
And you can learn more about what is being done with the money at SaveTheSowLaw.org.
And there we go. Thank you so much for being with us. And you stay with us. There's lots more in store here on the Ideas Network.